Did you know that Chinese emperors were building masjids in China during the time of the Sahaba? You see, in the mid-600s, Muslim merchants from Arabia and East Africa and Persia began sailing east across the oceans, building a trading network that reached as far away as China. And during the reign of the third caliph, Uthman ibn Affan, a delegation was sent in 650 to the then ruling emperor of China. Gifts were given and greetings were exchanged, and eventually the emperor ordered a masjid to be built in the port city of Guangzhou to support the growing community of Muslim traders. But around the same time that this was happening, the Muslims had just finished the conquest of Persia and were now entering Central Asia from the west side. By now, the Chinese Empire had been expanding from the east, setting up garrisons in the region to protect their western flank. It was clear that the two great empires were on a collision course with each other, competing for influence in the flat plains of Central Asia, but only one of them would come out victorious. Their fight began in the Fergana Valley in 715 when the Muslims deposed a local king and installed their own ruler. In response, the Chinese sent an army of 10,000 soldiers to take control of the valley and reinstall the king under their command. In 717, the Muslims then attacked again, this time attacking the Chinese garrisons directly. But the Chinese were very well prepared and managed to defeat the Muslims in the Battle of Aksu. It was a major setback for the Muslim expansion in Central Asia, and the Chinese were able to force the Umayyads out of the Fergana Valley. But while the Muslim armies had been pushed out of the region for the time being, Muslim merchants continued to travel east along the Silk Road, making it as far as the capital of China. There, more Muslim communities were built inland, and in 742, one of China's most famous masjids was built. Eventually, the Muslim armies would return to the Fergana Valley in Central Asia, this time under the flag of the Abbasid Caliphate. In 751, the Muslims managed to avenge themselves and defeat the Chinese at the Battle of Talas, marking the end of Chinese expansion to the west and bringing Islamic rule to the region. Soon after, the Chinese began a retreat back inward, but not because they had lost the battle. Rather, a new threat had emerged some 2,500 miles to the east, and this time, the Muslims were on their side. You see, in 755, a rogue Chinese general proclaimed himself the new emperor of China, and the empire erupted in civil war. In response, the Chinese requested support from the Muslims, and the Abbasids sent 3,000 soldiers to help fight against the rebels. Eventually, the Tang dynasty was able to regain control of the situation, and just when it looked like the rebellion was about to be defeated, one of the rebel generals decided to switch sides. In an attempt to gain the emperor's forgiveness, in 760 he went to the city of Yangzhou, arrived in the Muslim quarters of the city, and massacred thousands of Arabs and Persian merchants before making off with the loot he had stolen from them. He then brought this immense wealth as a gift to the emperor, who then forgave him. It was the first massacre of the Muslim population during the Tang dynasty, but unfortunately, it wouldn't be the last. In 874, another rebellion broke out, wreaking havoc throughout the country for a full decade. During that time, the rebellion leader Huang Chao led his army to Guangzhou, where China's first masjid and Muslim community had originally been built. He then massacred tens of thousands of Muslims, as well as the Christians, Jews, Zoroastrians, and any other foreigners who were living in the city. Twice now, the Muslims had been slaughtered, but still, they would just keep coming back. The two rebellions had weakened the Tang dynasty immensely, and eventually in 907, the empire was split into competing kingdoms. And yet the flow of Muslim merchants never decreased. Soon after, the Song dynasty emerged as the main power in China in 960. And under the new rulers, Muslims from Persia and Arabia found new opportunities, with many of them now beginning to work for the emperor. Throughout their reign, the Song dynasty appointed Muslims as ministers of trade, keeping them as administrators who managed the wealthy Muslim merchants and the port cities in southern China. The Song dynasty also brought in the Muslims as soldiers, such as in 1070 when the emperor invited an emir from Bukhara and 5,300 of his men to help battle the Liao Empire in the northeast and repopulate areas ravaged by war. And soon after, another 10,000 were invited to join him in China, not a decade later. Soon, Persian and Arab and even some Malay Muslims began intermarrying with the local Chinese, including the daughters of generals and bureaucrats, many of which converted to Islam as a result, and their children began a new generation of Chinese Muslims who were known as the Hui people. These Muslim Hui Chinese were now becoming bureaucrats and generals and scholars and merchants, and eventually over time the term Hui began to mean any native Chinese person who had converted to Islam, whether or not they had Middle Eastern heritage. It was now becoming clear that Islam had a foothold in Chinese society, and even though they were small in number, the Muslims, whether Arab or Persian or native Chinese, were now being put in positions of power, and the Muslim influence was quickly spreading. But all that would soon change as a new threat began to emerge from the north, one that would destroy the great Muslim empires in the west and wreak havoc throughout the Muslim world. It was now the early 1200s. The Mongols had arrived. Under the leadership of Genghis Khan and later his sons, the Mongol Empire quickly spread across Central Asia, massacring and destroying everything in its path. Within a few decades, they had destroyed the Muslim Khwarizmian Empire, and in 1258, they arrived at the gates of Baghdad and destroyed the city, killing up to 2 million people and bringing an end to the Abbasid Caliphate. But while all this was happening in the West, the Mongols took a somewhat different approach to the Muslims in China. By 1279, the Mongols had managed to conquer the Song Dynasty, renaming themselves the Great Yuan Dynasty and becoming the undisputed rulers of China. As part of their tactics of bringing minorities to rule over majorities, the Yuan Mongols then began importing administrators from the Muslim regions they had just conquered in order to work as governors in China. The most famous of these governors was Ejil Shemseddin and his son Nasruddin, who ruled over Yunnan. Their influence became so great that even today there's a large Muslim population in the region, with many Hui Chinese descending directly from them. A Persian vizier in another part of the Mongol Empire wrote that out of 12 governorates in the Yuan dynasty, 8 were ruled by Muslims, while the other 4 had Muslims as vice governors. Soon, the Mongols began importing Muslims from other fields to the Yuan dynasty. Muslim scientists and astronomers, mathematicians, engineers, and doctors all were brought into China, bringing their knowledge from the Abbasid Caliphate, where the scientific golden age of Islam had been. Even the capital city of Dadu was built by a Muslim architect named Amir al-Din, a city which was later renamed in 1368 to Beijing. The Muslims now had immense influence in the region, and under the Mongols, estimates show that the Muslim population grew to over 4 million by the end of the 1300s. And yet, the Mongols weren't exactly friends with the Muslims, and fearing that the Muslims were gaining too much influence, they enacted a number of policies to try and keep them in their place. They started banning Muslims from slaughtering their animals in a halal way, and they forbade both Muslims and Jews from circumcision. Later on, Muslims were forced to follow Confucian law for governing their marriages, and they were banned from solving civil disputes with their own Islamic judges. These policies, among others, began to spark outrage in the Muslims of China, and soon they began to join and support other non-Muslim groups in rebellions against the Mongols. In 1357, an army led by 2 Muslim Persians revolted against the Yuan dynasty, leading to almost a decade of war. In response, the Mongols massacred Muslims in Quanzhou, including almost the entirety of the Pu family, a Hui Chinese family which had ruled the city since the time of the Song Dynasty. However, the Mongols had now signed their death warrant, as 2 years after the rebellion was crushed, another dynasty would appear. A man who called himself the Hongwu Emperor rose to power with the support of a number of Hui Muslim generals. This was the man who wrote the 100-word eulogy praising the Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam that Blogging Theology loves to share on his channel. And under this new emperor's rule, the Arab and Persian Muslims would become fully integrated into Chinese society, building many masjids for them and having them intermarry with the Chinese, leading to nearly 10 million Hui Muslims living in China today. And that's not including the Uyghurs, Kazakhs, Dongxiang, Bonan, Dungan, Salar, Uzbek, Tatar, Tajik, Kyrgyz, Utsal, and other Muslim groups native to the land. From merchants by land and traders by sea to the administrators and the rulers of China, this was the story of how Islam first came to China and why there are so many Chinese Muslims with us today. And eventually, these Chinese Muslims will become scholars and merchants and sailors themselves, and they would eventually begin spreading Islam to other nations as well. Like and subscribe for more Muslim Facts.
The religion was brought to the country by an Arab ambassador to the Tang Emperor in the 7th century, less than 20 years after the death of the Prophet Muhammad. The Great Mosque was built shortly after, making it the oldest and most significant in China.